This is Four State Focus. News Radio 930 WFMD talks to newsmakers throughout Frederick and surrounding counties.
And welcome to our weekend public affairs show. This is Chris Michaels. Today, I am with Nick Brown, the Executive Director of the Religion Coalition. Nick, thank you so much for stopping by today.
For sure. Thanks for having me. Good morning, sir.
Well, I'd like to first address, just tell our listeners exactly what you do and who you are. I know I said what your title is, but what does that title mean exactly?
Sure. That means Johnny on the spot, I think. the full organization's name, it's a mouthful, is the Religious Coalition for Emergency Human Needs in Frederick County.
I'm glad I didn't have to say all that.
Right. Incorporated. I am the executive director and, I keep our strategic mission in play. So we are, the goal of the organization is to both shelter folks who do not have homes and to prevent folks who are in their homes from losing theirs. So that's the two real big efforts that we try to push, and that can take a lot of different shapes in any given day. So we are on the front lines of the rental crisis. We have a regular interfacing with all the community members to try to identify folks who are vulnerable, who can potentially touch the street. Prevention goes a much longer way than our sheltering services do. You know, it's much less costly to keep someone in their homes as opposed to having them in a shelter and then have to work through the rehousing process therein, especially in the housing market right now.
How do you go about doing that, though? How do you go about trying to keep people? Because you're 100% right, and it's a good point. How do you go about trying to keep people in their houses?
Sure. It comes down to really two main halls of effort. One is a financial need, right? There are rent arrearages that occur because of some type of hardship that's occurred in people's homes. Their lives have been upended by something, whether it's a loss of a job or a disability or otherwise, and it creates an entire vulnerability therein, right? So what we try to do is to be, we are a financial beacon first to help folks try to pay those arrears down, but we also have case management that can address what may be some underlying needs or some exacerbating causes that could again cause them to be vulnerable to touch the street. So we have we were the conduit through all of the ARPA funds a good number of ARPA dollars that have come through for rental assistance. We were the ones to distribute those out and have really stabilized. I think the number at this point is about 770 different households over the last 3 years.
Wow.
At a cost of, we're in the tens of millions at this point as far as output. And it's the crazy part is that the need hasn't slowed down. You know, we're still seeing folks come through the door daily to the tune of about 10 new cases a day. So that, and they, you know, with a $3,000, $5,000 and up need, you know, per household. So we try to be as nimble as the need, and sometimes, our legs get a little sore. So
absolutely. You know, and also too, there's, like we just talked about, there's a need because maybe somebody lost a job or a disability, but there's also a need for addiction.
Sure.
Unfortunately, addiction has been a big part of our country, and I don't want to say recently, it's probably been put on the map more and shined the light on more recently, but addiction, let's be honest, has been around for years and years and years.
Yep.
Is that something you'll help with too?
Not in a direct sense as far as having addiction services, but the linkage to both substance use program and mental health assistance programs are vital in what we do. What the sad part in talking, I'm glad you brought that up, is the one thing that we've done I think kind of collectively is move our focus from, speaking specifically to addiction, our focus moves a little bit, right? Obviously, the opioid crisis was huge, and the fentanyl things are out of control right now. We tend to forget that alcoholism is still rampant.
And gambling? That's
gambling, 100%. These are things that cause really, really difficult, when we try to find self-sustainability in households. One of those factors present will derail entirely. The course of trying to get gaining that stability back. So we try, as with case management, to make sure that we're linking our folks with those programs as needed. And it's tough sometimes, right? Sometimes we have to tell a household that, this is the hardship you told us, but actually it is this. You know, after we sit back and look at it from a little, from a 35,000 foot view, we can see that, we look at a checking account and see, gambling costs. FanDuel has been a terrible plague on the land, my own personal opinion. I'm guilty of it a little bit myself,
right.
But it's really, folks with that are already struggling with addiction have, fallen into that really, really tough.
Well, Nick, and I want to stay on that real quick, because you bring up a really, really interesting point, something we've discussed on the Morning News Express, gambling. Mm-hmm. Now there are a lot of municipalities that are going to allow you, and this isn't the anti-gambling, this is not what this is about, this is a discussion, so I want listeners to understand that. But a lot of municipalities now are going to allow you to actually put the gambling debt on your credit card, which, we know credit card debt is tough now, and interest rates because of credit cards are off the roof. And to me, that's going to really hurt the problem even more with gambling. It's no longer just going to Vegas or going to Atlantic City and gambling. Now it's online everywhere.
You can be on your couch. And those little drops of $10 re-up, they definitely they add up. And that's it is tough. We are one of the ways that we again try to counsel, keep people in homes, is we do look at through your income, we look at your budget, and if there are unnecessary spending, then we try to call that out, right? Everybody's adults, so it becomes very difficult to try to change that behavior if that is already ingrained behavior, but we try to highlight it as best we can.
And that's also an addiction, not just gambling and alcohol, but spending.
Yep.
I know my wife is guilty of that. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. But no, it is an addiction. Some people when they're, and it goes back to mental health, some people when they're depressed or upset, what do? They eat or they go and gambling.
Sure.
So there's just so many addictions out there, Nick, besides drugs and alcohol, that should be addressed.
Yep, 100%, 100%. And then that's where, we get asked a lot of times, what do you think the cause of homelessness is? Well, we see main topics happen, but, the underlying causes that again, make it really, really tough to undo those main topics are always present, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where we try to affect wherever we can. Generational poverty is a big one.
Right,
absolutely. Health, with less than ideal health, what's the word I'm looking for? Ideology, right? Mm-hmm. Self-health will go out the door, and then that starts that cascade, right? Mm-hmm. Your tooth goes bad, you can go septic, you lose your job because you missed work, and that just ripples on down the line. So we always will, never be judgmental about how folks have survived or learned to survive. We try to counsel as best we can on other paths potentially. So it's a push pull a little bit, trying to get folks to, to see a different, that there's, different way to go in some of these cases.
Nick, I wonder too, a lot of times college debt is big, okay, with people, which puts them under the water. They can't afford to pay their college. A lot of youth, and again, I'm not anti-college. I think college is great, but it's not for everybody.
Sure.
A lot of youth out there sometimes feel like they're never going to make it in life because they can't afford college.
Right.
And I don't know if this pertains to what you guys do, but, is there a way we can tell the youth, listen, college is not meant for everybody. You can go to a great trade school, and mentor the youth, saying that just because you can't afford college, you can still make a success out of yourself.
100%. And that's, I was actually just having this conversation with my kids, I think a night or two ago, and that really, and as we know, the trades are hurting right now for
Absolutely.
People, right? You have these vets that are ready to retire, but they keep getting redrafted back in because there's no other workforce there. And that is that's an interesting shift right now. So I've done this work for at least homeless direct service work for about the last 20 years or so, 23 years. Now I had a hairline when I started, right?
Join the club, my friend.
And you see those dynamics shift after a while, right? The degree is not a widely sought after thing now because people are coming out racking up six digits of debt, making $30,000, $35,000 a year, right? Whereas you get these trades that are coming in, 40, 50, and up and up and
right,
up. 100%. And that's an ideology shift that we all need as a, and I think it's being more and more exposed to the kids nowadays. Mm-hmm. They kind of get it. You know, my oldest daughter was on the fence about going to school. She kind of went, kind of didn't, and, you know, wanted to see it for herself, and I applauded it. I wasn't going to say you have to do this because, you know, again, you don't want to be saddled with that debt.
Right.
And that then you have to deal with as you turn into an older adult.
Right.
As we still spend some, you know, some ways now.
I you know, and I feel bad. I didn't mean to switch it up on you.
Sure, but
I really was curious about your opinion on that because sure. A lot of times, you know, people do go into school debt and they can't afford the essentials
yep.
that they need in life because once you're in debt, you owe the government. You're paying that money no matter what.
Right.
So it kind of goes hand in hand with what we were talking about mm-hmm. and people, you know, needing help.
Sure.
Veterans, too, is probably you have a lot of I'm sure have a lot of veterans who sure. served our country.
Absolutely.
And, you know, suffer maybe from PTSD,
mm-hmm.
You know, probably could use the help, too.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. When it's really, you know, all walks of life now. And I think one of the takeaways post COVID is that the typical household, you know, the quote typical household doesn't really exist anymore,
right?
You have folks that have been living, you know, under the poverty level. You have folks that were middle class or had, you know, really affluent jobs, and the bottom falls out and everybody's in the same bucket. You know, it's a, you know, it's kind of a crass thing, but you know, there's even the king poops, right? Everybody sits down. It brings us all to a common place when you're in need.
The 12-year-old immature person in me loves that comment. I gotta tell you. Go ahead. Sure enough.
All right, but you know, right. Equity, right? Everybody is the same as anybody else when it comes down to a need that we can help with, and that's the truth.
So. You know, and I wonder too if a lot of it is again kind of switching up a little bit, but I really value your opinion on this.
Sure.
I wonder if a lot of it too is. As far as debt and stuff goes with education,
mm-hmm.
we're not educating our kids enough about credit card debt. You know, you look at a lot of these credit card companies. I don't know if they're still doing it, but back in the day, they were over there in colleges saying, hey, come get a credit card. You know what I mean? You know, buy now, pay later.
Sure, sure.
And I think that might be another problem.
So 100%, you know, back in a time when there was no, you know, app on, there were no cell phones, so there was right. no app. It was just a click, you know, slide, right? You didn't know what you were burning up until you got that statement in the
right.
mail.
Right, monthly.
Yeah, monthly. The best thing that I'd heard in the last couple of years were that high schools were mandating financial literacy courses.
Which is great.
100,000%, right? We got, I think the most I learned in high school was how to write a check.
That's what I learned too. That was it.
So the fact that they're coming out with anything now is fantastic. And that is what we see now in I'm thinking one person we're dealing with right now in his 70s. First time he's really lived on his own and has to understand what all the fees are to live, right? You have budgeting to somebody who's never had to do it before for decades and decades, it becomes extremely difficult to do. And that's a real, so yes, absolutely, we applaud all financial literacy.
Let me ask you a question, because we were talking about generational poverty before, mm-hmm. and do you think that kind of ties in with it? Our generation, the generation before that, not really getting educated on finances, maybe why that's why...
Yep.
We've had this poverty from generation to generation. And I know that's not completely it. There's other factors that go into it. There's,
sure.
you know, there's race and all this and you know, stuff like education and mm-hmm. stuff like that. But could that be part of it?
Absolutely. You know, it's and I don't know. I know my office has it. I don't know if you guys have it. But you guys have a memo or a master document that's been copied over time or you know, 5 or 6 copies over. And now the image has shifted completely off the paper. Right. If you have a household that does not have those, you know, does not have that knowledge that passes on to the next generation, it only gets more cloudy.
Correct.
Right. And what we see, there was a really I've told this story in years past, which was it really highlighted the survival skill mentality or the lack thereof. Or I don't want to sound, you know, callous towards anybody, but I was in the grocery store one day,
mm-hmm.
and there was a young lady, and she had a baby with her, and in her cart were a handful of things, baby vitamins and food and all these other stuff, and she had one of those rag magazines, which are terrible, right? National Enquirer, whatever. No, sorry. In case they're listening, sorry. And she didn't have enough money. And instead of the rag going back to the shelf, it was the vitamins that she put to the side. And that has stuck with me very, very heavily, to the point where I actually ended up buying them for her because I couldn't let that go.
Well, it's like with cigarettes. You talk about addiction. People buy cigarettes right. over, not to interrupt you, over a sexual item. So yep. just kind of piggyback off what you were saying.
Yep. So that, you know, and that, again, you know, to talking to health disparities, you know, what does that do to that, you know, downrange, and then right. that ripple effect that you're talking across generations can be really, really impactful. So the better the start, obviously, the better the, you know, the continuing race.
You know what I learning more about your organization, you know what I love about your organization is, yes, you're helping people financially, which is, of course, great,
sure.
but you are educating. Sure. Okay, you just told me a little while ago that you actually look into an individual's finances and see what they're doing wrong and try to educate them, because it's not all about money.
Right.
Sometimes you need to educate somebody. Sometimes you know, there's other tools out there to help them.
Sure.
You know, you can give somebody money. You look at all these people that won the lottery, okay? They won the lottery, but then they're broke.
Right.
Why? Because they're still spending.
Yep.
So you kind of go down deep and dive deep inside what the issue is, and I love that about your organization.
Sure. The holistic approach, right?
Right.
You know, we want to try to keep homelessness recidivism to a minimum, so the better that we can, you know, lay that path out, the better, for sure. And that's where we try to cook that into any of the services that we try to provide.
Now, religious collation. So the word religious,
mm-hmm.
People will look at that word and say, well, what type of quote-unquote religion are you? Will you help somebody who believes something different? Where does the because religion is such a hot topic. Where
sure.
does the religion come from? It's not one set religion. It's a bunch of different people, all races, all religions getting together, right?
Yep. So the history of the organization stems back to 1981. So technically we are 43 years old this year. And what it early in the 80s, I don't know if it was HUD or I think Maryland State or HUD, one of the two, it would have had to be HUD, sent out a national alert to create a cold weather shelter in all jurisdictions. So we had, you know, weather-related deaths all over the place, and they really wanted to try to stem those. So that was the, you know, one of the main drivers of the creation of the Religious Coalition. We had some very strong partners, some of which are still with us today, working through various items that came together and wanted to create a central place that the local congregations could send people who were needing assistance. So they were, you know, folks were showing up to church doors, so they wanted to have a coordinated place to send folks in need. That's our DNA. That's how we were created. And then very shortly after the organization was formed, then the cold weather shelter effort started in local congregations and in churches. So over those years, the organization grew. We've had some really big shifts of in our timeline. We stopped doing the scattered site emergency adult shelter, living in different buildings and church basements, to then now landing the property at DeGrange Street. That happened back in 2005. And then about a decade later, we created the first emergency family shelter here in Frederick, but then started its life living in church buildings on a rotating basis, that we then in 22 just opened up the fixed site for that program. We went from small to big, or we're a medium sized nonprofit right now, smaller on the staff side, but the impact is rather enormous, and that's where we like to be. But talking about religion and the perception thereof is something that we have really had a very long conversation about over the last 2 years. We've had it kind of both ways. We've had a very strong support from our faith partners, and that's not going to change, right? Which has been our founding. It's been the seeding of the organization. They watered us, and we've been growing ever since. What it comes down to, though, is as we struggle, because we're a nonprofit in the fight for funding, we have to be conscious that there are funders in the corporate land or otherwise that view us as a church, quote, or that we, again, have those religious requirements of our services, which we have not. And that's been a fascinating conversation that we've had. One of the things that we open up with a lot of these conversations are, do you think the Religious Coalition is a faith-based organization, right? And 99% of folks have said yes. There are people who know that we don't require you know, religious activities, but there are other folks that say, well, you were founded by, you know, faith-based, and your mission is of a faith-based, you know, tenet, which all religions say help your fellow man. So in that regard, we're quote faith-based, right? On the mechanical side, though, we don't require it. I'm not clergy. I'm the first non-clergy ED. I'm largely a social worker administrator type.
You're just a person who cares about other people.
Exactly. And it is not, as I said before, I'm not a non-believer, but I am a non-subscriber, right? So it's a matter now of how do we rebrand the organization? So we have worked for, again, only the last 2 years, doing a self-evaluation, understanding our external perception, and our name has caused a lot of confusion as we go. The unfortunate part of it are because there have been folks who have had a difficult time with something that was that involved religion, right? Whether it's intolerance or bad experience, people will opt not to come and seek assistance, being vitally needed, because they think that we're going to require them to do something of a religious nature, which was one of my main drivers to want to work through a rebrand, right? The fact that we can't serve people that need it, is that kind of stuff will keep me up at night.
Not only that, Nick, too, but I mean, listen, you said yourself, you're a nonprofit, you need donations. Yep. That's the only way you can survive. People maybe who don't believe in faith religions might not donate because they think they're donating to a religious cause they don't believe in, right? Or they just don't believe in religion in general, and you need those donations.
100%. So, and that's where it's been a very interesting line to walk. We certainly want to keep our faith-based friends as a partner, as a strong partner, right there beside us. At the same time, we need to be able to, you know, universally seek all the funding that we can possibly, you know, find out there. And that's been an interesting walk. So we do have a new name. We have new branding and a new logo. And this will be actually publicly revealed just about a month from now.
Yeah, so. And believe me, folks, I tried everything to get it out of him. He would not give it to me, so you're going to have to wait, just like I'm going to have to wait for the new name.
My development officer will love to hear that. So, you know, she's elbowed me a few times as I've talked. I will weave it into various conversations or speeches. So, you know, if you're listening, there might be some unveiling there.
I hope you email me to let me know a day before.
100%.
I promise I won't let anybody know. But getting back a serious topic here. The only way, being a nonprofit, you run is via donations. Do you get any type of help from the county or state? Okay, I was going to say, because that might be an issue, because I know you have the separation between religion and state. They might see you guys as a religious-based organization.
Sure. So we are, the funding pattern is all topics, right? So from the feds all the way down to just an individual donor, mm-hmm. and everywhere in between. And to be a federal pastor, you can't be a religious organization, like, technically, right?
Right.
So we've had to answer that question a few times, and it's known now. We've been a federal funder, recipient for over 20 years. So that's always been an interesting check off on the box.
Right.
That is a key piece. So yes, the city and the county are very involved in the coalition, coalition's operations, but being both a funder as well as an advocate and otherwise. So we definitely have worked with local municipalities, and I can say this with no exaggeration. I don't know that there are more a combination of municipalities locally, at least, that have more direct involvement or have that will to want to help. Right, that's an important piece. The nonprofit sector doesn't have to go and convince the mayor, doesn't have to go and convince the county executive to get involved. They know that they need to get involved, and that's been a very great partnership to have.
And now Jessica Fritzwater, county executive, mm-hmm. newly county executive, she's been supportive also. That's good. That's
100%.
Good to hear. Yeah. It's so important. You know, we need to always put our political differences aside,
yeah.
and give credit to those who help. And in my opinion, shun those that don't. That's, again, my opinion, no matter what, you know.
You share that opinion.
Yeah. So that's good. And again, being a nonprofit, obviously you rely on the public. Very important. I want you to tell me, how can the public help? And it's not always about money. It's also volunteering their time.
Sure.
But with money or volunteering, how can the public help?
Yeah, a couple different ways. Obviously, contributions go a long way, for sure. Our volunteering opportunities, interestingly, have been, they're really scuttled by COVID. We had a very robust volunteer opportunity in each of the, you know, the office and both shelters.
Even still now?
Prior to. And then because we really shut, you know, went skeleton crews across the board, staff have filled in a lot of those roles, and that's just been kind of the way that we've gone. We are right now re-racking our volunteer opportunities, and with the new website that'll be launched in a month, also have new volunteer opportunities by the various departments that we operate. So definitely get involved. But even before then, if anyone has a desire to get involved, contact us, right? Once we have our form to things, that'll be great. You can check off a box. But if you have an in-kind offer, right? If there are anybody, and this is, I've made this offer a lot. I don't know that I've had anybody that's taken me up on it. If you have a vocation that you want to share with our shelter residents, right? If you want to have we have a great volunteer that comes in and did a sewing night, brought in three or four machines at the family shelter and taught everybody how to use sewing machines.
That's good.
Right?
That's important. That's great. I don't know how to sew.
Me either. My daughter has one, and I just started away from it. Infinite ways to try to, you know, if folks want to, for sure. We look for folks to provide normalcy nights. Normalcy nights for the family shelter. Take folks out, go to that football game, go to the, you know, whatever it is. So if there's an interest by anybody in the public, definitely reach out.
Okay, and how can they go about doing so? Website, I would.
Sure, yep. Website right now is rcehn.org. My email is nbrown at that same exchange. Folks can certainly reach out with any questions or.
And Facebook, you guys have a Facebook page where you can reach out.
Absolutely.
Okay, and one more time, because I think you guys do such great work, and I knew of you, but now I'm really learning about all the hard work that you do. Please give that website again a little slower so people can donate. It's very important.
Absolutely. RC.
Four State Focus has been a public service of News Radio 930 WFMD. Past editions of this program are available in the audio vault at WFMD.com.